Okay. You know, some years back, there was a breaking news, and the then Secretary of Indian Department of Biotechnology, Manju Sharma, had gone into Paris and made a statement at an international conference. The statement was that India is developing a protein-rich potato, which will have a, you know, a higher percentage of the protein percentage in that potato will go up by 30%. And she said, since potato is a poor man's food, this would address the issue of malnutrition in India. Now, that news was a big news for the foreign media. And I remember sitting in my small office, I got frantic calls from the international media. The New York Times had it on the front page. The Washington Times had it on the front page. Of course, all European newspapers also had it on the front page that what a wonderful, you know, development that they had developed a transgenic, of course, potato, which they called as Protato. Protein-rich potato was called Protato. So the question asked to me was that why are you opposed to genetic engineering when this wonderful breakthrough can address the problem of malnutrition? Of course, India has the largest population of malnourished people in the world. My answer to them was, I was, of course, taken by surprise because I didn't even know of this statement. Suddenly, you got a call from Paris. But the point I'm trying to make is that my answer to them was, well, what is the full statement? If you read it carefully, it actually tells us that the protein percentage that existed in potato, that has been raised by one-third more. So which means, whatever it is. So, you know, media immediately imagined that the potato will have 30% protein. I said, no, it is saying what is existing in the protein percentage existing in the potato, that has been jacked up by 30%. And I said, I asked the question, I said, what is the protein percentage existing in potato? Of course, the anchor would know. So I said 1.6% is the average protein percentage in the potato. If you raise it by 30%, which means it becomes 2%. What is this excitement that I see all around? That, you know, with 2% of protein in a potato, you think you're going to address the issue of malnutrition. Now, that tells you where the interest lies. If, you know, if you see, it became a front page news in the New York Times. When India went to war with Pakistan, it was on the news was, you know, hidden on the 28th page of New York Times. And suddenly this news, even when this Manmohan Singh went to America, the news didn't appear in the American newspapers. Only when you know, he had this discussion with Nawaz Sharif, then only the news were appearing somewhere in the American media. But that tells us, you know, but suddenly, you know, their concern for India is known, but suddenly, you know, you find this genetically modified potato being, you know, hogging the limelight in the foreign media. So it becomes very clear whose interest we are playing to. Now, that potato, we have never heard of it again, thank God, because it was a useless thing to talk about. Now, similarly, when I look at the development of golden rice, Ingo Portratis is, of course, not a friend of mine, but I have met him at a conference in Sweden recently, where he literally, I won't use the word threatened, but he warned me that I will see to it, how do you stop genetically modified rice, the golden rice, to come into India because we are all set to bring it into India by 2014. That's what he said. So I said, I'm not, you know, your warning to me or your threatening to me. The point is we will weigh and we'll see whether it is good or bad, and then we'll see the pros and cons. And if it is not matching up to what we need, we will definitely stand up and oppose it. But if it is very good and everything is taken care of, then I think we have no reasons to stand up and say this technology is bad. But having said that, the point is we have been evaluating the golden rice story. And we, as I said, you know, it's no different from the Protato story that was tossed on to the world media at one stage. And if I go back some years earlier, when I was a student of agriculture, the scientists have developed what is called as Promato. You know, Promato at that time was a plant they had developed by crossing, not by transgenics, but by crossing, natural crossing, which said that, you know, it will be a potato and tomato. So it's quite clear, you know, on the roots you will have potatoes, and on the upper part of the plant would carry tomato. And, you know, we all know it trickled out because nature does not allow that. Nature does the opposite. So on the top you will have the leaves of potato, and on the bottom you will on the roots you will have the roots of tomato. That's what basically happened. And from tomato, nobody talks about anymore. And so from tomato we had moved on to potato, and that both the kind of development that took place have actually fizzled out. I will not be surprised if we go in for a transgenic route to now produce tomato again. Some people would be doing. But let's also look back into what nature does, you know, what normally its preference is. You know, there's a very good story about Bernard Shaw being met by Rita Hayworth, the film actress. And Rita Hayworth told Bernard Shaw that, you know, she would like to marry him. And, of course, he asked the question, why, pretty lady, you want to get married to me? She said, because I want my offspring to have your brain and my beauty. He said, but nature does the opposite. It will have my offspring, our offspring will have your beauty and my, you know, will have my beauty and your brain. And I think we can laugh it off, but tells you very clearly the nature is not so foolish. And that is why it has always gone in a manner which I think the world has accepted, and also it has stabilized over the years. Now, secondly, when you try to bring in vitamin A, beta carotene precursor into the plants through this route. And of course, I remember Tony Ingo was on the front page of Times Magazine, and Times Magazine, you know, played it up as the you know, savior of the hungry and malnourished in the world, and so on, the technology breakthrough that came about. But let's not forget, there was a lot of excitement even at that time when Time Magazine did the cover. But I've always been saying in the 1940s, the mid-1940s, Time Magazine had also done a cover on the man who developed a DDT. And DDT after 30, 40 years was is now blacklisted and it's been run down, and nobody wants to talk about DDT anymore. So the Time Magazine cover should not be taken as the yardstick to see whether their technology is relevant or not. Now, let us look at the realities. Often we are told that, you know, UNICEF would say 124 million children are affected by vitamin A. Somebody says, WHO says 250 million children. I really don't know what really is the figure. And by looking at the way Indian hunger situation is, we can safely say that one-fourth of them live in India. You know, so you know, we get an impression that some studies will tell us that 50,000 children die every year in India from vitamin A deficiency, from blindness, and that is one of the studies. But then I'm sometimes amazed, if so many people are dying, how come the lifespan is going up in India? Or the lifespan is going up in China, for that matter? You know, where the largest concentration of the poor is at present. You know, in India, 1947, when we got independence, the lifespan was 31 years. Today, the lifespan is 65 plus years, you know. So it has happened without vitamin A, golden rice, and it has happened without any transgenic crops also all these years. So the lifespan has been increased without, you know, transgenic crops playing a role to help nutrition and to address the issue of a micronutrient deficiency in the human being. Look at China. China's lifespan is today 74 years plus. Now, that tells us that, you know, they have made long strides in the areas where they should have focused, you know, poverty eradication, sanitation, water, and social, cultural requirements that go into building a healthy life. All these things, if they are taken care of, your nutrient ability is addressed, and your nutrient deficiency is addressed, and that is how the lifespan increases. So I think this is very clear. If the lifespan is on an upswing in developing countries, it clearly tells us that if it can happen without the transgenic route, there's no reason to really panic that, you know, if we don't bring in golden rice, children will die of vitamin A deficiency. Having said that, in the recent years, you know, of course, even within the country, in India, vitamin A deficiency is coming down. And also in their studies, of course, now available about the Philippines in the last in 5 years, the vitamin A deficiency in children has dropped by 25% without, you know, even the golden rice being on the shelf today. So it tells us that, you know, it has followed various, you know, approaches to address that issue of vitamin A deficiency. Now, having said that, you know, let's look at India. In India, we have a huge, huge surplus of food. We have today, even today, we have about 70 million tons lying or wheat and rice lying in these stocks, stocked with the government. Since 2001, on average, 60 million tons has been the surplus that India had carried of wheat and rice. The average protein percentage in wheat plant in the stocks that we have is about 9%. Let's say 8 to 10%, but let's say an average 9%. The average for rice is much lower, let's say 5 to 6%, but let's say 5 to 7%, but 6%, let's say, is what the protein percentage the rice would contain. Now, what I'm trying to tell you is it's part of the same design that at one time the government of India was trying to bring in a technology from America which would have addressed malnutrition. And look at the technofixes that we always develop. That technology was actually developed by a company called RiceX in America. They had actually done a patented technology, converting rice bran. Rice bran, as you know, is the outer layer on the rice grain. Now that layer, they took it out and then they converted it into human nutritious food, proteinous food, and which this was patented. We didn't know what it contained, but they were trying to sell into India, saying that you have the largest population of malnourished. So if you take this food that they have produced, the malnutrition will be addressed. And Indian government was, of course, very very excited about it, because any technology, any junk technology also, you can sell into India in the name of technological development. So this was no exception. So RiceX joined hands with Monsanto to set up a plant in Karnataka province of India with an investment of about $200 million. So there was a lot of excitement that $200 million investment is coming into India. That is one of the ways we are blackmailed economically to be told that this technology is good for you. But nevertheless, I wrote an article at that time that look at this development model. We have 60 million tons of wheat and rice. Now this is human nutritious food. We are not trying to feed our people. We are actually exporting more than half of the of this stored rice. And when we export this rice, it actually goes to meet the requirement of the cattle of the Western countries. It goes to feed the cattle. And these cattle are then slaughtered and goes for the human food chain. Now that means you are exporting your human nutritious food for the cattle of the Western countries. And rice bran is traditionally used as cattle feed. So you're converting cattle feed to provide human nutrition into India. What a remarkable model of development, I said. And I didn't realize it, but that article did create that furor, as a result of which that investment was stopped. RiceX chairman has, in subsequent emails to me, has never pardoned me. He thinks I'm the biggest culprit, and the British Environment Secretary said recently about the people who are opposing golden rice, he called them wicked. I think he also gave me a lot of names, saying that you are the ones who's coming in the way of eradicating malnutrition and so on. But I stood up and I still maintain what I said. I still can't fathom why should India be exporting human nutritious food for the cattle of the Western countries? Why can't it feed its own people? If you feed your own people with the human nutritious food containing 8%, 9% protein or 6% protein in the case of rice, let me tell you, if you remove hunger, you will be automatically taking care of hidden hunger. Hidden hunger means your micronutrient deficiencies or mineral deficiencies in the human being. Now, if you were to give him the right kind of food, let's say wheat and rice, of course, you have the staple food, but add it to the balance it with other kinds of nutritious food that is available in plenty in this country, you have addressed not only the issue of vitamin A deficiency, you would have addressed all the deficiencies which go along with in the classification of malnutrition. So that could have been taken care of. But that is where the challenge lies, and I think that is where we all know is the right pathway for any country to adopt if it really wants to remove malnutrition. Now, this technofix that is coming up into India is also, something which we need to question, first of all, and the nutrition point of view. Now, why I'm saying nutrition point of view, I remember in my discussions with Professor M.S. Swaminathan, the distinguished Indian scientist who is also known as the father of Green Revolution, and also, with the former Director General of International Rice Research Institute, Robert Cantrell, who happened to be on a committee with me on the CGIAR, the Consultative Group on International Agriculture Research. Both of us were on a committee on the intellectual property rights. And we would discuss this issue, and he himself would agree with me, and I've written about it, that both Swaminathan and Cantwell agreed and admitted that this was not the way to really take care of malnutrition or to take care of even vitamin A deficiency. Why? I remember when I was discussing with Professor Swaminathan, his answer was that, you know, the one thing that you require for the absorption, the most important thing is absorption of these nutrients, you know, which you supply externally. Now, these nutrients require the abundant availability of fats in the human body. You know, and one thing which is conspicuously absent in the malnourished people is fats. So even if you give the dose, or, you know, whether it's through the rice or through the, you know, other means, unless the human body has those fats to absorb these vitamin A or the beta-carotene precursors, it will not be able to deliver. It will not be able to absorb that, and then it will, the results would not be there for us to see. So it's very clear that, you know, unless you address that issue of first addressing the issue of hunger, you cannot really make about any dent as far as removing a particular nutrient deficiency is concerned, which is vitamin A in this case. Let's move on to the other issue. The argument that the industry makes is that the availability of vitamin A rice, or golden rice, would actually provide people with choices. You know, which means, you know, those who don't need it, fine, but those who need it would get another rice which will be in the market, so they can buy it and cook and, you know, address their issue, the nutrient deficiency. But the question is, you know, I don't know why rice is also becoming like toothpaste. You know, we have a dozen brands of toothpaste in the market, so you can make a choice. But in the case of food, I thought, if you look at, given a choice, what the poor in India want is actually the food that is stocked in front of his eyes and rotting. You know, the godowns are full. The poor do not have the means to buy that rice or the wheat that is lying in front of their eyes. If these people have to be given a choice, I think the choice should be to allow them to get that food that is lying in front of their eyes. That should have been the choice that we, the international community, should be talking about. But nobody wants to address that issue of availability of food that I think is the biggest factor causing hunger in developing countries. Food is available, but poor do not have the means to buy it. So basically, it's an issue of access and distribution. It's a critical issue which has not been addressed, and it cannot be addressed by technological fixation or techno-fixes that the industry is trying to evolve. So given these two conditions, two scenarios or two you know, pictures are represented, I think it becomes very clear that even if vitamin A rice was to come into the scene, it would not make an impact the way it is being projected now or hyped now. So what we actually need is to understand the politics of technology in the light of the macro picture of the globe. Now, Tony, it's very interesting. In 1996, when we had the World Food Summit, and subsequently, I remember attending the World Hunger Summit at in Bonn. I don't remember the year, whether it was 2002, 2001, but nevertheless, I remember the mayor of the city saying that today 24,000 people die every year from hunger or hunger-related ailments. So his point was, 24,000 people die every day from hunger or hunger-related ailments. So his point was, at this particular rate, if Bonn was to be faced with the same crisis, it would take just 7 days for the population to disappear in Bonn. And subsequently, I did an analysis in my presentation I made at that conference. I said that you are all talking about that, you know, you should be moving in an urgency to remove global hunger by the year 2015 or 2020. But 2015 was the cutoff year for 20 years after 1996. They had actually promised to remove half the world hunger, which means out of the 850 million people who were living officially in hunger, they had actually promised to remove half the world hunger by the year 2015, and they had called it urgency, which means about 400 million people will be pulled out of hunger. In my analysis, I said, by the time you actually deliver this, let's assume that you are going to remove half the hungry by the year 2015, the number of people who would have died from hunger would be 120 million. So 120 million people dying, I said, till the year 2015 from hunger, and you are calling this an urgency that you are trying to really address the issue of hunger. that clearly shows the dishonesty of the international community in addressing hunger. Even now, we have enough food. In fact, 2012, the year 2012, the estimate is that the world produced food. We have a population of 7 billion plus today. The world actually produced food for 13 billion people in the year 2012, which means double the population. The food that we produce is good enough for feeding double the population at 2,700 calories per capita. Now, if that is true, then I think it is a criminal intent of the political leadership, and that includes the leadership of British government, of which Mr. Peterson, the Environment Secretary, called us wicked. It's a criminal intent of these countries to keep the hungry hungry. There is no reason why the people should be living in hunger when there is so much of food available across the globe. Why are people living in hunger? It's because these countries, under the trade laws, under the food laws, under the production parameters they are developing, under the distribution structures and so on, actually have created this kind of a dichotomy that there are people, billion people living in hunger today in developing world. Even that, of course, is an understatement, but even if we agree that, billion people living in the hunger because of the intent of these people not to address the issue in a very proactive manner. Why I'm saying this is 40% food goes waste in America. In Europe, another 50% food goes waste in Europe. Just in Italy, the kind of food that you waste in Italy is good enough to take care of hunger in Ethiopia. The food that we waste in America alone is good enough to feed the entire sub-Saharan Africa. Now, if you are not doing it, is it not criminal on your part not to be focusing on that issue? And you are telling us that because we don't want the technological fix to come in and do more damage, you are calling us a bigot. But what about you? Your hands are laden with blood, you know, if I may be allowed to say, because you, knowing it, have been perpetuating those policies which actually exacerbate hunger, which actually does not address the issue of hunger the way it should have been done. So having said that, I think it has become very clear how and why the world is trying to blame not only Rachel Parent in Canada, but people across the globe who have had the courage to stand up and point out at the real picture, as somebody called, as demons or as bad guys or as fall guys, whatever it is, you know, they kind of do it. Now, let's look at the technology. The technology, the green, the Golden Rights one that they developed was, of course, a technology which didn't find much favor because of the low content of beta-carotene, so it fizzled out, and I'm glad it has gone. Now we have moved on to the GR2. GR2 is, you've taken a gene from maize and inserted into into the rice, and that has gone into Japonica rice, and so again it's a golden color. So you are trying all efforts to bring it into, make it a little white or acceptable color, so that, you know, breeding into indica varieties, and then, you know, trying to make it acceptable to the people. The arguments, of course, are the same, that, you know, this will take care of your requirements. But there are two issues here which are very important. Ingo Protractics, of course, tells me that there should not be any safety studies done on this. I take serious objection to it. Ingo has said in discussions, private discussions, sitting over dinner, that he is appalled by the way the studies are being done, and I think that is coming in the way of taking this, because malnourished people are dying, and that is where we need to address. And as I said, malnourished people are not dying because they don't have the right kind of food. It is because the food is available in plenty, but, you know, it's not being distributed or not being made available to the poor that they are dying. So the fault is somewhere else, and we are looking for solutions somewhere else. This has been the bane of development process everywhere across the globe. So the fault is always somewhere else, and we look for those kind of solutions where the companies can make money in the name of addressing that particular development issue. This is no exception. Now, in this particular case, you know, let's be very clear. We have studies which show very clearly that beta-carotene in the rice plants, you know, with the passage of time in storage, its availability gets reduced. There have been no studies actually to really go on to the extent of telling us what will be reduction. Let's say if it is kept for 5 months in stocks, that rice, you know, whether it beta-carotene will still be available to those people that we will be providing the rice is not known. And even if that minuscule quantity is available, how will it make a difference is also a bigger question. And if you have seen the Indian situation or seen any developing country situation, rice normally in India is stocked for a year or so. And in many cases, we know It is the Food Corporation of India has talked for several years, before it is released into the public distribution chain. So by the time the beta carotene, that claim would have disappeared. Also, the beta carotene, let's be very clear, it breaks down in light and oxygen. So I think that kind of a thing is also very worrisome, because that's something which India has an abundance, or developing countries have an abundance, both light as well as oxygen. So I think that should make it very clear that this product is not going to stay effective for longer time in the market. Even if it, let's say, we bring it back to the farmer or to the hungry, it's not going to be, sure whether that claim that we make about the availability of beta-carotene would also be there. And also we know that, there is a limit. Everything has a line or a limit beyond which if you take, it becomes very harmful. So we know when you start taking the rice two times or three times, we don't even know, because in India there are communities which take rice, they don't even take rice a day. There are communities which eat rice three times a day. There are communities which eat rice once a day. So I think we need to see what will happen to those communities which eat rice three times a day. Because excess of beta-carotene also leads to various ailments, including cancer. So I think we need to be very careful. How will you ascertain, how will you ensure that, everyone is very careful that, what exactly in terms of grams and so on, that this is what their intake has to be, that will be ensured. I think this is completely impossible to maintain and ascertain. So on the availability front, these are the kinds of issues that will, of course, crop up every time. But more important also is the issue of the health. We have now got a study from Serralini, Dr. Serralini in France, who tells us that, the transgenic corn that was fed to rats in his own trials has shown massive emergence of tumors and also mortality in both male and female rats. Which has shocked the world. And if you got those pictures of the rats with tumors, this is, rats being fed for a lifespan, which means 2 years, which corresponds to about 80 odd years in human life. So imagine if a child in India was to eat genetically modified golden rice for his lifespan, what will happen? What will be the health impact? You are addressing the vitamin A deficiency in the human being by your claims that, this will address that particular issue. But what about the other, hundreds of problems that the same person is going to be suffering from in the days to come if he was to take transgenic food or if he was to take golden rice? So golden rice cannot be seen as just one aspect. It has to be seen in totality in what the genetically modified crops, the damages as far as the health concerns are being raised all over. So I think it is very important that we place the golden rice in the context of the latest study done by Dr. Serralini and tells us that, addressing one issue and living with 20 other ailments or diseases or tumors for the rest of his life, I think is certainly a wicked proposition that is being thrown at us. And those people who are throwing it, of course, will retire very gracefully and may get, a lot of perks and compensation as bonus from this industry, after they retire, which obviously is there and is happening globally. And millions will be left to die or live in squalor or live with diseases or suffer these diseases in the years to come. I think it's something that we need to really focus upon. And does vitamin A therefore provide an answer? The vitamin A deficiency through beta-carotene availability into the golden rice plant provide an answer? The simple and the straightforward answer is no. It only will help to raise the stock prices of those GM companies. And the stock markets, the way they play, few people earning millions or earning a lot from the rising stock markets is what matters to Syngenta or the other companies who are trying to produce golden rice. It is not a humanitarian task, as the foundation is called. It is basically a task which is under the garb of humanitarian, is basically how to raise or how to manipulate profits in a way that, the stocks of these companies can grow. So it is, the message that they want to give it through the foundation is that as if they are doing a great job for us, but actually they are doing a great job for themselves. And knowing that the human value has No, it doesn't matter in developing countries whether a few hundred people die here or a few hundred people die there. It doesn't matter to them. So it is not a collateral damage that they are worried about. So their all interest is how to maximize their profit. And Golden Rice will provide them immense opportunities because Golden Rice is the first product which they think, as I said earlier, the emotional attachment, the emotional blackmail can push it through. And then it becomes a kind of a opening up the floodgates for other transgenic crops and plants which are not at all required and which will be doing more damage to the planet than we have seen in the last so many centuries.
Wonderful.